We do not have much information in the Gospels about Jesus' listening skills, but I believe he was a good listener. We have plenty of stories of people coming to Jesus with all sorts of needs and requests, and we also have stories that seem to slow the pace of Jesus then interacting with them in the most profound, or about the most profound questions of life and identity. I'm thinking of those stories of Nicodemus, Zacchaeus, the woman at the well. They seem to slow the pace, and we can imagine Jesus paying attention, really listening and drawing people in into the circle of acceptance and love. I also believe that Jesus was a keen observer, and he would do the thing that now we call people watching. That Jesus would sit at a corner in the street and be looking out to see how people react and interact with one another. Maybe get a chuckle or two. So imagine with me a young Jesus, 12, 13-year-old. He's working in his father's wood shop, and there he's covered with sawdust. And an acquaintance of Joseph comes by, just a neighbor, and he has a story. When you come to a neighbor to tell a story, that's also called a gossip. But let's say it's a story. And he's telling Joseph about some other neighbor. Let's name him Jethro. Jethro's son was gone. He's been gone for so long that Jethro was the only one who expected that young man to be alive. Everyone gave him for death. But then this neighbor tells that Jethro's sons came back one night. And Jethro was so boisterous in his happiness that it sounded as if there was a wild party going on in that house. And Jesus heard this story. Imagine with me Jesus walking along, visiting his relatives, running errands. It's kind of hard imagining Jesus running errands. And as he walks along, he sees this bush on the corner, this pest of a plant that no matter how many times people cut it or try to uproot it, it keeps growing. And sometimes even breaking through the stepping stones. This pest of a plant is in a corner full of birds who make their homes, in this mustard seed bush. One more. Imagine with me Jesus going into the temple and they're noticing a tall man is standing tall, proud. This is someone with the gravitas of a leader. And this man who's standing tall and proud is saying something under his breath, perhaps a prayer. And not far from him, there's another man. Jesus kind of knows him, but only knows him by the names the neighborhood called this man. The neighbors called this man the traitor. And the traitor slouches with his hand on his chest, mumbling something under his breath, perhaps a prayer. To me is the power of Jesus' stories, the power of Jesus' parables, to me comes out of this connection between divine wisdom and insight, but also true human presence. That to me is what makes the stories, this parable, so punchy, so forceful, so visceral, and so relatable too. We're told in the gospel reading that this parable that we know of, the parable of the Pharisee and the tax collector, was directed at someone who trusted in themselves and that they were righteous and gathered other or regarded other with contempt. I think this is perhaps the most tantalizing of Jesus' parables. So simple. One of the characters is praying and is full of pride, while the other seems to be embracing a gentle sense of humility. It's a no-brainer. It is short and sweet. We do not need to think too hard to draw a line. In its simplicity, it seduces us to choose a side. To choose a side and to draw a line between these characters. Now, friends, have I ever told you how we trap land crabs in Puerto Rico? I don't think I have. These crabs, they live in the sand and in the dirt. They could grow around 6 to 7 inches wide. They're delicious, by the way. And they dig these burrows, these holes in the ground. And the way we trap them is we put a square trap made out of wood on top of their burrows or their holes. And you would think that they are trapped because they have no way out. Well, that's not the case. They dig the hole. They're diggers. If a hole gets blocked, they dig around it. They don't get trapped because there's no way out. They're trapped because they're tantalized and seduced by the sweet smell of molasses or honey or ripe mango that we use as bait. But molasses is the one that makes it happen. They don't seem to be able to hold back their sweet tooth. And when they smell the molasses, they climb into the trap, they touch the little trigger, and the trap door falls, and that's it. And you get about 6 or 7, maybe a dozen of those, and you'll have a delicious meal. This parable of Jesus is a sweet trap. Think about it. In its simplicity, the temptation is for us to take side, to prefer one character over the other, perhaps to even see ourselves as one of the characters, either the Pharisee or the tax collector. Most likely the tax collector, to be honest. I don't think many of us would like to come across as proud and conceited in church. It is a sweet trap. But I bet Jesus is up to something. Jesus always is. This parable is covered in molasses. While the Pharisee is standing proud, he is really not a villain. Traditionally, we have seen relationships between Jesus and the Pharisees as oppositional. Yet, biblical scholars in recent decades have been stating that these oppositional views between Jesus and the Pharisees, or what we have considered these oppositional views, have been influenced by anti-Semitic ideologies. And that the relationship between Jesus and the Pharisees was more like family tension than a confrontation of enemies. Pharisees were spiritual leaders. They were faithful to the law. They were stewards of the faith. And then we have the tax collector who is presented as praying this posture of humility. But it's important for us to remember that tax collectors were collaborators with the oppressive forces of the Roman Empire. They were considered traitors who benefited financially and socially from working with the tyrannical invaders. I told you this trap is covering molasses. Once we fall for the sweet temptation to draw lines, to judge one over the other, the trap door falls, and we're on the trap. And if it was just that we are presented with this trap of sorting, of categorizing, of drawing lines, only with this parable, that'd be fine. But we are presented with this sweet trap of categorizing, of setting lines, of sorting people and judging people every day. If I'm honest, I must admit that I go about this business of sorting people into different categories, even when I'm not aware of it. And I do not only categorize people. I come across in my story in a better condition than others. I'm sure I'm not the only one who does that. I might not go as far as to say, God, I thank you that I'm not like the other people. But I do the mental and spiritual exercise of drawing lines between one another. Conservative versus progressive, generous versus greedy, dignified versus insignificant, open-minded versus prejudiced, and so many other categories and lines that I draw. The trap is there, but what if we don't have to fall to it? What if we, with God's help, recognize that sorting, judging, and drawing lines is really not our business? That's not our job. There is a beautiful drawing by a pastor and artist named David Hayward. He's known online as the Naked Pastor. He has a drawing of a group of people with giant pencils. They have giant pencils, and they're drawing lines between themselves. And among those people in that drawing, there is a Jesus figure. You can tell it's a Jesus figure because the artist draws some sort of crown of thorn on this character. And this Jesus figure also has a pencil, but the pencil is upside down. You know where I'm going with this? He's using the eraser. There is Jesus erasing the lines that people are creating to divide themselves. In this parable, we learn from both, from the Pharisee and from the tax collector. This parable can be a sweet trap, but it can also be a sweet invitation for us to learn from everyone, especially for those that we least expect, to be good listeners and observers of the ways in which divine wisdom and spiritual insight come to meet us in the everyday encounters. Early in my exploration with becoming an Episcopalian, I came across this quote from the Reverend Richard Giles, who's a British Anglican priest. He wrote, "Cast iron certainties are inappropriate when we can never be sure how God will choose to surprise us next. It might be in a carpenter's son from a one-horse town named Nazareth, or in the stranger in need of a bed for the night, or in the person that others want to banish from the church. One can never be too sure. Best to remain open, always." So friends, as we go about facing this sweet temptation to judge, to categorize, to draw lines, I think it'll be good for us to remember the words of one of the benedictions that we use here at St. Mark's. This benediction summarized to me the way that we are to live as followers of Jesus. It says, "Life is short, and we do not have much time to gladden the hearts of those who make the journey with us. So, be swift to love and make haste to be kind." Amen.